Welcome to Coastal Cafe. I'm Aaron Barnett, your host today. Coastal Cafe is a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the University of Washington's College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. Today, our very special guest is Nicole Baker, who also works at the College of the Environment in the School of Aquatic and Fishery Science, but also has a company called Net Your Problem, which is tackling the pernicious problem of derelict and used fishing gear with new and innovative approaches. And recently we had the pleasure of working with Nicole on a project of making recycled crab gauges out of recycled yellow rope, I believe. And Nicole can definitely tell us a little bit more about that. So anyway, welcome to the show, Nicole.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you for having me. Hello, everybody.
So tell us about Net Your Problem. What's the mission and what do you aim to achieve?
Well, we have an official mission statement on our website, which I can't actually remember right now the exact wording, but it's about helping fishermen have a different option for getting rid of their nets, lines, ropes at the end of their useful life, and at the same time, encouraging manufacturing with recycled plastic instead of using virgin plastic for all of the environmental benefits that that saves. So we can reuse or recycle lines and ropes and nets once they're finished being used, so we don't have to take them to the landfill.
So when you're speaking of nets and ropes, what are these nets and ropes used for? I mean, what kind of fish and what kind of fisheries?
We work primarily with commercial fishermen, so not really the rod and reel monofilament kind of stuff, but we're talking about trawl nets that are used in Alaska and on the West Coast for fishing pollock, which is the fish that's in your McDonald's fish sandwich, or hake, or rockfish, these kinds of species. We also recycle gill nets and seines, which are primarily used to target all the five species of salmon. And then we also recycle lines that are found in pot fisheries. So if you think of Deadliest Catch, the big crab pots have lines that are attached to them that then have the buoys at the surface for the fishermen to see. So those lines eventually come to the end of their useful life, and we can recycle those as well. And I am based in Washington, and I'm in charge of Alaska and the Pacific Northwest region of the U.S. We also have employees in California, Maine, and Massachusetts. So similar gear types, but different fisheries. In Maine, we have lobster. On the East Coast, they have haddock and a lot of these other species that West Coast listeners might not be familiar with, but the gear types are the same.
Mm-hmm. So how do you... How do you prepare this stuff to be turned into a raw material for the recycled products, which we'll get into in a minute? So when you approach the fishing industry or individuals who own boats, how do you actually get the gear, and then what happens to it after that?
That is my favorite part of the whole business, actually getting the gear. So we go to fishing ports and basically offer our services and say, here's my business card. When your net is at the end of its life, we have a recycling option in said port. And so if you want to do something besides taking your net to the landfill, then you can contact us and we'll let you know how to participate. And the rules for participating vary based on the gear type. So if you just have some old line you want to get rid of, that doesn't really require any extra work on your part, because it can just be ground up and turned into plastic pellets, just, you know, the way that it is. Trawl nets, we accept also the way that they are, because it is a lot to expect an individual fisherman to take apart an entire trawl net. For gill nets and seines, the way that material is disposed of in those fisheries is that fishermen primarily will just cut out like a section of a seine that they want to replace. And that actually is the material that we want. So we accept that. And similarly with gill nets, it's already, you know, sort of standard practice that fishermen will reuse the cork line and the lead line, and they'll just get rid of the web in the middle. And so the web is also what we are interested in recycling. So we don't see it being too much work for fishermen or changing any of their regular business practices in order to do recycling with us.
So I would assume that it's cheaper to give that stuff to you than it is to pay a landfill to take it. Is that correct?
We try to make it that way. Yeah, we have some costs that we obviously have to have. We have to rent warehouses. We have to use trucks and forklifts, and we have to send stuff on ocean freight shipping containers. So we try to make the price as low as we can to basically encourage participation. I understand that if our recycling services cost three times as much as it costs to take it to the landfill, that's going to be a very difficult economic decision for someone to make, regardless of if they might want to do that or not. So we are very cognizant of what the alternative options for disposal are and try to be as competitively priced as we can be. But I'm not going to say in every case that we are cheaper than the landfill. In some cases, we're not, and we just can't be.
How many tons of fishing gear do you think you've collected since you started? Do you have a
I know that number right away. It's 1,113,000 pounds. That's what we've collected so far. So I have a running spreadsheet that every time we collect something else, I enter it in and have this tally. But the way that we do our recycling is in a very transparent manner. So we fill out these scale tickets. We show people, you know, this was the weight of the material that you sent us. You know, if people ask, like, here's the shipping receipt that shows where we sent the material afterwards. So because we have all these traceability kind of things, then it allows us to have like this running very accurate tally.
Now pound for pound, as opposed to virgin plastic, what is the CO2 or net zero carbon benefit as opposed to using virgin plastic?
The EPA has some data on this, which is not, you know, fishing gear specific, but they say is that if you take 1 ton of plastic to the landfill, that's sort of their base, you know, that's like the zero. If you incinerate it, it generates 2 extra tons of CO2. And then if you recycle it, it's like -1. So recycling is better than landfill and then incinerating in terms of the emissions produced from disposal. And as far as the environmental benefits of utilizing recycled plastic in manufacturing, I do have some statistics on this, which maybe we can put in the show notes or something afterwards. I can look that up. But, you know, it saves electricity, it saves space, it saves oil, it reduces carbon emissions. So there are a lot of benefits associated with using recycled plastic in manufacturing too.
Well, that leads me to my next question, which is about the project that Washington Sea Grant's been involved with. So we purchased some crab gauges, which were made from yellow ropes from aquaculture long lines, I believe. Could you explain the journey that, say, some of this stuff that's found on the beach, the journey that it takes from the beach to the finished product, which we're going to be giving away, by the way, at the Seattle Boat Show. So if anybody's out there and wants to come to the Seattle Boat Show and get a free crab gauge made from recycled yellow ropes from aquaculture farming, please stop by. So yeah, could you explain that process to us with that specific product in mind?
Yeah, it's a pretty cool story, I think. And I'll be at the boat show actually on the 7th because that's Women's Day. So if you are a woman and you want to get a free ticket to the boat show, that's the day to go. But this whole project sort of started with me being introduced to Lee First, who is the employee at the Twin Harbors Waterkeeper Association. And they had been doing beach cleanups for a while and just noticed these very small fragments of bright yellow rope that they were constantly finding in all these different beaches along the Pacific coast of Washington. And she ended up getting funding to do these yellow rope working group meetings, which I was invited to by my colleagues at the Coast Savers group. They also do beach cleanups on the coast of Washington and also on the Strait beaches. And this yellow rope working group basically was shellfish growers, Sea Grant was there, Surf Rider, Water Keeper, Coast Savers, Oregon Sea Grant was there, the Shellfish Growers Association. It really was a very diverse working group. And we were trying to figure out, you know, where do these yellow ropes come from? Why are they even on the beach? What can we do to prohibit them from entering the marine environment? But in the meantime, if we are going to collect them, what do we do with them? So a lot of marine debris, sort of beach cleanup groups, invest all this time and effort in collecting materials from the shore, but then ultimately have to take it to the landfill afterwards because there is not really good disposal options. And when I first saw these yellow ropes, I thought these should not be going to the landfill because if you look at them from a recycling perspective, it is a uniform source of a single polymer of plastic. So the yellow ropes are made out of polypropylene, which if you think about your household recycling is the number fives, and they're all polypropylene. So it would be very easy to mechanically recycle them, which is the process of shredding them, grinding them up, washing them, melting them down, pushing them through a screen that has a bunch of small holes, and then these little beads of plastic come out on the other side, which can then be utilized in the manufacturing process. So we worked with some plastics and composites engineering students and professors at Western Washington University in Bellingham to manufacture crab gauges. So they're these sort of sticks with two points on the side, and they have these measurements, and you hold it up to the back of a crab to basically see if it's legal size or not. So these ropes were sent from the beaches of Washington to the Ocean Legacy Foundation in British Columbia, which is the company that did the mechanical recycling of these into the pellets. Then the pellets were sent to the plastics lab at Western. The students there sort of poured the little pellets into this mold that they had made during one of their classes. And then the plastic gets melted down and out pops this crab gauge. And so that whole process happened, I think, at the end of last year, so in December of 2021. And I'm going to pick them up very soon, and they'll be at the boat show. Aaron and his colleagues will be giving them out.
That's right. So when you mentioned washing, what's involved with washing a material like that before it gets processed? I know they don't have people scrubbing the brushes. They must have some other system to wash all this stuff. What does that look like?
Yeah, that's not my specialty, actually. And I think sort of their whole process for how they turn the ropes into the pellets is sort of a proprietary technology that they've designed. But I do know that there was a lot of sand that came out of that because most of these ropes are sort of extracted from the beach sand. And if you've ever held a rope, I guess you can sort of twist it the opposite way of how it wants to be twisted, and all of the fibers loosen and sort of the grains of sand fall out. So there was actually a challenge in terms of this cleaning process because we want to have a high quality pellet for use in manufacturing.
And if you're just joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM for Townsend. And I'm Aaron Barnett, today's host of Coastal Cafe. And we're speaking with Nicole Baker of Net Your Problem. We're talking about recycled plastic from fishing nets and rope. So now I have a question about, obviously there's other things that are made from plastic. Could you talk about some of the other things that are made from this material?
Yeah, there are, I think, sort of an indefinite number of applications for using this plastic specifically from recycled fishing gear, but recycled plastic in general. So the types of plastic that we deal with are high density polyethylene, which if you think of your household recycling is number twos, like milk jugs or yogurt containers. I already mentioned polypropylene, which is the number fives. And then the gill nets and seines are made out of nylon, which the chemical formula for that is PA6. So that's a polyamide type of plastic. And you can find recycled fishing net nylon in a lot of bathing suits and workout wear. And Patagonia has a new line of puffy jackets that are made out of this kind of nylon. So a lot of the recycled nylon applications that I've seen that utilize fishing nets are in clothing that we wear. And then in terms of the polypropylene and the polyethylene, we've seen sunglasses, we've seen kayaks, we've seen buckets, dustpans, lampshades. I'm trying to think of some other things. I think I mentioned sunglasses, knife handles. So there are a lot of different ways that these types of materials can be incorporated into products that consumers could actually purchase themselves. And that's one of the things that, you know, a lot of people say, like, how can we get involved? How can we help? This is so cool. And I'll say, if you're curious about that, one of the ways is for you to purchase products that have recycled content in them. Because if nobody wants to buy products that have recycled plastic in them, then it doesn't make sense for a recycling company to process it. And it certainly doesn't make sense for me to collect it. So the consumer demand for these types of products does sort of drive the whole system and make it worth it time-wise and financially wise. So that's a cool way that that anybody really can help sort of keep the recycling system going, is by looking at products and spending your money in ways that align with your ideals and what you want to see in the world. I think money is a very powerful way of saying what you do and don't want and voting with your money. So if nobody buys something because it only has virgin plastic in it, then people are not going to continue to make that. They're going to continue to make what people are buying.
In addition to the market framework you just mentioned, what are some other challenges and barriers that you faced, you know, approaching this recycling issue this way?
Yeah, I think one of the main barriers, which I don't want to call it that because it can be worked around, roadblocks, maybe temporary roadblocks, is how to pay for, you know, the recycling costs, right? Like that, I feel like is just such a cliche answer, right? It's the money that's the problem. But, you know, for some places where we've worked in Alaska, just as an example, taking stuff to the landfill is free. So it makes it very difficult to ask fishermen or other people to pay for recycling when they have this alternative that is legal. You know, they're not dumping this stuff in the ocean. It is managed, just not in the way that I think a lot of us would like. So that's been, I think, one of our main challenges, is just how do we figure out how to pay for this? And we have been very creative in figuring out ways. So a little while ago, I did a webinar called Working with Unlikely Partners, and it was construction companies, breweries, Grundins, if people are familiar with that clothing company. They make rain gear for fishermen. So, you know, these types of organizations you wouldn't necessarily associate with a recycling program for fishing gear, but they have contributed to helping us in different ways, offering storage in their parking lot, operating, you know, using equipment that they have to load our nets or unload our nets, giving financial contributions, you know. So the way that we have set up our programs is in a for-profit way. Net Your Problem is a for-profit business. So it does not rely on grants to fund the operating costs of our programs. The reason that I set it up this way is because that's what I believe was going to be a financially sustainable way of continuing the work that we started. So if everybody involved is getting paid their market rate, then there's no reason why the recycling services that we offered last year aren't going to continue this year or the year after or the year after. So I think it is important, even if it takes longer or if the answer isn't immediately obvious of who is going to pay for this, to set up the program in a way where everybody involved pays their fair share.
It's a market-based solution. So do you have any plans you want to talk about, or what's next? I guess I should just say it that way. What's next?
Yeah, what's next? So this summer is a new project for us in Bristol Bay, Alaska. So NACNEC is one of the sort of home bases for the very large Bristol Bay sockeye salmon fishery that generates a lot of gillnet web waste, and that had previously been going to the landfill. So we will be offering our recycling services in Bristol Bay this summer, which I'm very excited about. This has been a project that has been more than 2 years in the works. So like I mentioned, even if it's not immediately obvious who is going to pay for this, it's worth the long-term effort of figuring that out. I have also just recently hired an employee in Massachusetts to start working with the lobster fishermen, the gill netters in Cape Cod, and the trawl fishermen in New Bedford. So we're going to hopefully be opening up a warehouse in a couple of months and offering disposal services there on the East Coast. We do already have a warehouse in Maine. We call it the Rope Depot, where people can drop off lobster line from Maine. And we're going to be later this summer doing some educational workshops in the Florida Keys about the availability of our recycling services there. And I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but I might also be having my eye on the Gulf of Mexico and to do something with Texas Sea Grant there with the shrimp fisheries.
Is it too early to say what you'd be doing with Texas Sea Grant?
Just same, collecting nets and sending it for recycling. So they were somebody that, a group, I guess, that was just interested in what we were doing and have helped us with some on the ground research there of, you know, what are these nets even made out of? That was something that I didn't know. I've never been involved in the Texas shrimping industry. So we just had to figure out, you know, what do they do with the nets? What materials are they made out of? How many do they have? How many do they go through a year? And sort of do this market research to see if it's sort of worth it for us to go there, if there is enough material being generated.
I'm going to put a plug in for my colleagues at Louisiana Sea Grant. They have a very large commercial fishing program. Probably one of the biggest, actually. That's probably 2/3 of their programming is commercial fishery. So you may want to give some folks down there a call, and maybe I can look after somebody there. So we have a few minutes left. Is there anything that you'd like to add or make sure that our listeners are aware of, or something that we missed? So this is your chance to comment on something that we may have missed.
Yeah, if you happen to go to our website, you can see this map of where we currently have recycling programs. There's a little Net Your Problem logo in the general geographic area. And if you are a fisherman, or your dad is a fisherman, or your daughter is a fisherman, and they would like to do recycling, but you don't see your home port listed on that map with the logo, please reach out to us, because that is what our mission is. I should have said that in the beginning. Our mission is also to have recycling programs available in the top 50 ports in the U.S. That's a long-term vision for Net Your Problem, which Louisiana is actually pretty high on the list. So that would be great. But we want to have these recycling programs available for people all over the place in the U.S. so that you have an option for recycling your fishing gear at the end of its life. So if you don't see a place where you might be able to take your gear, then please let us know and we will work with you to start one.
And where can folks find that information? What's your website address? What's your web address?
The web address is just www.netyourproblem.com. And from there, you can also find all of our social media things. We're on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and LinkedIn and all the places businesses have to be these days to be found. So we're pretty active on there and trying to spread the word and let people know about what we've got going on and how they can be involved.
Great. I have one question about tribal involvement. Have you had any engagement with any of the Washington or Alaska tribal folks?
Yeah, they've actually been important partners for us in both Alaska and in Washington. So the Quinault Indian Nation got a grant from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation to extract gill nets from the Quinault and the Queets rivers that were blocking the blueback salmon from migrating out and coming back to spawn. So they cleaned up the river, and then we're working with them to dispose of those nets as an alternative to the landfill. Some of that we can't mechanically recycle, so that goes to a waste to alternative fuel plant in Washington where it gets turned into a fuel to run a concrete plant. So it's not recycled sort of indefinitely like how we think of recycling water bottles, but it is an alternative to the landfill. And then we have also worked with the Chuyung tribe in Dillingham, which is another sort of home base for Bristol Bay sockeye salmon. They've had a program going there for recycling for a number of years, probably 10 years. So we're working with them to improve, I guess, their program and help them find new markets for the web that they spend so much time and effort to collect. So.
Well, thank you very much, Nicole. That's been very interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing where your project ends up and all the great things you're doing. I'd like to thank all of our listeners for joining us. This is Aaron Barnett, and you've been listening to Coastal Cafe, a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the UW Call to the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM for towns. Washington Sea Grant helps people and marine life thrive by providing research, technical expertise, and education to support the conservation of our ocean and coastlines. I'd like to thank our program director, Larry Stein, and production engineer, Jared Dufresne, and as always, a special shout out to the band Q-Ich for sharing their music with us at the open and closing of this program. Thank you for listening and have a great day. Hot to us, you do, ha, she get on. Hot to us, you do.